Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. Comment is the big conversation. It's the great debate, but it cannot be either without you. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls. 44208-601-4555. You call us, we'll call you back. Establish a clear line. And remember, if you got on the television with me, the volume on your television has to be down at zero, or no one will understand either of us, and I'll have to move swiftly on. You can SMS the show on 4478-00-00-8066. You can email me at comment@presstv.co.uk. You can tweet the show at @comment_presstv. There can be no equivocation. Must be. No equivocation. The beasts, the savage, disgusting beasts that call themselves ISIL or whatever else they want to call themselves, committed yet another foul, disgusting crime. And not for the first time, they videotaped it so they could put it up on YouTube. They think it makes them look attractive. The cold-blooded, foul murder by decapitation of a captive, helpless, his hands handcuffed behind his back, that was brought to the whole world this week via YouTube, is another foul and disgusting crime. It invokes only horror, loathing, disgust, and fury in any right-thinking person of any religion. So far, so much in common between me and the political class and the media that have gone into overdrive about this latest foul crime. It was carried out, one assumes, in Syria, where the young American man was captured. So let's examine whether it was the first or whether it was in any way unprecedented as a crime. You know very well that that's not true. You know that for more than 3 years, ISIL or ISIS or Al-Qaeda or any of the other ragtag, ragbag, ragtag and bobtail Takfiri fanatic savages have massacred tens of thousands of people in this way. But the blood that was spilled onto the sand in those cases was different. It was Syrian blood, Syrian Christian blood, Syrian blood of other religious and ethnic minorities in Syria. And it was different in one other important respect also. Because the ragtag, savage terrorists who've been doing these things and videotaping them, they even put up a video of them eating someone's heart, which they cut out of his chest. When they're in Syria, they're our allies. When they're in Syria, they're freedom fighters. When they're in Syria, they're moderate Islamists that are deserving of British and American taxpayer money and so-called non-lethal military materiel. This is a grave and serious dichotomy. As you've heard me say here many, many times, it is not possible that Al-Qaeda can be your ally in Syria and can be the biggest threat to human civilization, but only when they drive across the border into Iraq. That's not possible. No one can take that seriously. And as I put it to William Hague, when unfortunately for him, he was trapped in a lift with me in Parliament, I told Mr. Hague, "You've been wrong all your life, but you've never been insane before." But the policy of backing with bucks and bangs Al-Qaeda and other extremists in Syria is actually insane for a variety of reasons. First of all, if they were to succeed, what conceivable good do you think it would do the region and the world to have Al-Qaeda in power in Damascus, on the Mediterranean, a terrorist state on the Mediterranean? And secondly, what do you think is going to happen when all these savages that you are encouraging, paying to go to Syria, come back to our own country? Do you think they're going to become Boy Scout leaders when they come back to Britain? Do you think they're going to go into voluntary work? You think they're going to start attending dance halls and cinemas and forget all about what they've done, what they've learned in Syria? No. They're going to come back and wreak murder, mayhem, and havoc here in our own country. I said at the time that Private Rigby was similarly, viciously, horrifically, cruelly murdered by two maniacs in South London. If these maniacs had gone to Aleppo to do such a thing there, William Hague would have paid their fare, metaphorically speaking. He would have paid for the knife, metaphorically speaking. So, where are we now? Now that we're being instructed by the mass media to consider ISIL the greatest threat to human civilization, brackets, but only when they're in Iraq, what are we going to do about it? Who's going to stop them? What is the biggest threat to ISIL? That's the question, and here's my answer. The biggest threat is utter revulsion by 99.9% of the Muslims in the world. Number two, the need for the new Iraqi government and the new Iraqi prime minister to build a wide enough coalition and get enough support within his country that his army will fight and defeat what, after all, is a terrorist group of between 10 and 20,000 members. Thirdly, Iraq's neighbors will have to step up to the plate and assist them. Not Britain, not the United States. Them intervening in the war in Iraq can only help ISIL, can only help grow ISIL, can only help consolidate support behind ISIL. So, how are we going to stop it? Support Iraq. That's not actually what we're doing, and we'll come back to that point later. Secondly, you really can't discuss Iraq without discussing Israel. Because you see, right as I'm speaking, Israel is decapitating Palestinian women and children. Not with a knife, but with rockets and missiles and shells, high-velocity munitions. Tends to knock your head off, you know. There's more than one way to decapitate someone. And more than well over now, 2,000 Palestinians have been torn to pieces. It's not on YouTube. It's definitely not on the BBC, Sky News, or Fox News, but it's happening nonetheless. And guess what? The United Kingdom, that is so horrified by the decapitation in Iraq, is actually selling weapons to Israel, which are decapitating small children, babies, women, and men in Gaza. So will you condemn it? How will you condemn it? What are you going to do about it? Tell you what I've done. I've demanded, for these last 5 weeks, I have demanded the recall of the British Parliament so that the public can know the MPs are not just for deck chairs, but the MPs can be convened to discuss the gravest crisis almost throughout the entirety of the Arab Middle East. Let's take the first call. Hamid is in the Netherlands, wants to talk about ISIL. Hamid, welcome.
Assalamu alaikum, George.
Walaikum assalam. Go ahead.
George, I have two questions tonight.
Mm-hmm.
The first question is, you know, I remember you said a lot about this ISIL.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you were to be a magician or to play cards for people, you would have won $1 million for them, you know, because you predicted about this ISIL, you know.
I did.
Yeah, because you said if they support them with these weapons, later they'll come back to Europe or to the States,
yep,
you know, to attack. And really, we can see it came true now. It's coming true.
Yep.
You know? And secondly, too, on Facebook, there are a lot of sheikhs that, you know, well known, but I don't want to mention their name. You know, they give some fatwa on Facebook, like the ISIL said they are jihadis. What they are doing is jihad. They should continue to fight. But sometimes I challenge them on Facebook, you know, because this is not good. You know, what kind of fatwa is this? You know, I wonder where, you know, I don't understand, George.
Well, I understand, but thanks for the call. I understand. ISIL are a murder gang, no more, no less. They have killed in Iraq and in Syria tens of thousands of people, Muslim people, Christian people, Arab people, Kurdish people, journalists, captives of all kinds, priests, bishops. They are a murder gang, and anyone that supports them cannot possibly describe themselves as a Muslim. It is not possible for a Muslim to support this kind of sectarian massacre, this kind of cold-blooded execution of people who have done you no wrong. That journalist did them no wrong. He was a captive in their hands. He was helpless. He was unarmed. And in cold blood, they cut off his head and filmed it to send it around the world. This is not Islam. This is not anyone who believes in God who could possibly carry out such an act. And it's maybe the 20,000th or 30,000th such act that they have carried out. It's not the first. It's not unprecedented, not in any way. It's been happening for more than 3 years with the complicity, with the money, with the weapons, with the training, with the transport given to them by the very Western countries that are now so horrified at what they have seen. Abu Bakr is in Kenya on the subject of Israel and Gaza. Abu Bakr, welcome to the show. Go ahead, sir.
Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam. Turn the volume down, brother, on your television, please.
Okay, Mr. George, I've done that.
Okay, brother, go ahead.
I want to talk about Palestine.
Yeah.
Okay, it really hurts when you see countries like UK, US, not doing enough to stop Israel bombing the Palestine.
Well, they're not doing anything, Abu Bakr. No, it's not just that they're not doing enough. Yeah, they're not doing anything. They're giving the weapons and the ammunition.
It's true. Sometimes I just ask myself, what if it was vice versa? What if Israel was the one being bombed by the Palestine? What if Palestine was the one killing innocent, let's say, Israelis? Will the US and the UK keep quiet? Would they have done that?
No. What we both know, and what most, if not all, of the people watching this know, is that for these governments, UK, US, and many others, the blood of Muslims is cheaper than the blood of others. There's a kind of hierarchy of blood. And that one American, one British, or one Israeli is worth 100, maybe many hundreds, maybe thousands of Muslims. We reject this. No person who believes in God can accept this. No right-thinking person, whether they believe in God or not, can accept this. And it's this dichotomy, this double standard that lies at the heart of all of our problems. Let's talk to Faiza in California, USA. Faiza, welcome to the show.
Hi, George. Can you hear me?
I can very clearly. Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Thank you. I want to ask your views on two topics that I think that it's not being exposed enough. First is the Rothschild, which, you know, all of us know that it's the U.S. government and Britain behind these wars in the Middle East. But we're not pointing the finger enough at the Rothschilds that we know own all the banks, central banks, the Federal Reserve, and the Bank of England, and also the Israel's plan to build the greater Israel, which is why all these wars are happening, because they do want, you know, to not only make the state of Israel, but they want, you know, the greater Israel. And that's not being exposed enough also, which, you know, if we can research about that, we can see that they want a larger state, which goes from Syria to Egypt to half of Saudi Arabia to Iraq and, you know, Lebanon. And those two points are not being exposed enough, the Rothschild and the Greater Israel plan. So I'd just like on to ask you your views on those.
Yeah. On the second of your two points, the two blue stripes on the horizontal blue stripes on the Israeli flag represent the Nile, the River Nile in Egypt, and the Euphrates in Iraq. And these delineate the land that the most extreme of the Zionists lay claim to. They say this is Eretz Israel, Greater Israel. Now they, a year or two ago, could only have dreamt that Israeli power could possibly stretch from the Nile to the Euphrates. But it's not so far-fetched any longer. After all, the military junta in Egypt is not occupied by them, but it might as well be, because it is working in perfect synchronicity, perfect collaboration between the military junta in Egypt and the settler apartheid state of Israel. So that's the Nile. And in Iraq, but not quite yet to the Euphrates, the Zionist state and the American and British imperialists have at least achieved this. Directly or indirectly, willingly, or accidentally, half of Iraq is no longer controlled by Iraq. Half of it has fallen to a very obscure, ultra-extreme, savagely violent extremist group which is ready and has murdered people of all kinds but has never once attacked Israel. They haven't so much as thrown a stone through an Israeli embassy window, but they have massacred Christians, Muslims, Arabs, Kurds, and many, many others all over the Middle East. On your first point, Faiza, I'm sorry to tell you that you're just completely wrong. First of all, the Rothschilds do not own all the banks. In Britain, they don't own any banks at all. You said that the Rothschilds own the central banks, and you said in the United States and in Britain. The Bank of England, which is our central bank, is owned by the government and has been for the best part of 100 years. And these kind of misconceptions, which I'm sure that you have honestly read somewhere, are capable of taking you down a very dangerous blind alley. The Rothschilds are an extremely rich Jewish family, but they don't actually own any banks in Britain. I could run through the banks. The banks in Britain are owned by a combination of shareholders, ordinary shareholders, and the British government using taxpayers' money that just bailed them all out. I appeal to you, stop looking under bushes and hedgerows for Jews. It's first of all racist, and it's secondly completely wrong. Our problem is not with the Rothschilds. Our problem is with Obama. Our problem is with Cameron. Our problem is with Murdoch. Our problem is with the governments of America and Britain. And virtually none of those are Jews. It's a very dangerous blind alley that you'll go down by following some trail to find some connection to the Rothschilds. Don't let Obama off the hook by believing that he would do what he should do if only there weren't the Rothschilds or some other Jewish cartel operating behind him. It's him who's guilty. It's Cameron who's guilty. It's Holland who's guilty. It's Merkel who's guilty. It's all these other countries, the Saudis and others, who are supporting mass murder in Palestine, directly or indirectly, that should be attracting your ire and your forensic abilities, not the Rothschilds. Now, we're talking about UK arms exports to Israel, and we're going to do so with Ahmed in Manchester. Ahmed, go ahead. Mo, I'm told it's Mo on the line.
Hi, George.
Welcome, Mo. Where are you?
I'm in Birmingham.
Birmingham, go ahead.
George, in July, maybe about 4 or 5 programs ago, you said you cancelled your TV license in protest to the actions of Israel against Palestine.
That's right.
And the biased coverage of BBC.
That's right.
I did the same. I cancelled my TV license, and I got bugged by various phone calls asking me to renew my license, which I refused. I now receive a letter to say that my TV, despite the fact I've cancelled my direct debit in July, they have sent me a TV license till the end of January, and I haven't paid, which means they obviously don't want to be confrontational about the public mood against...
No, they don't. First of all, They don't want to take on the tens of thousands of people who are now refusing to pay their licenses. You're one of them. I'm one of them. I hope many others will join us. I'll be right back. Welcome back to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, which remains the voice of the voiceless. Tonight we're condemning UK arms exports to Israel and asking you how you condemn them. And we're asking, what's the greatest threat to ISIL? What can stop the madmen, the throat-cutting, heart-eating madmen that have enjoyed such largesse and support from Western governments, but only if they stay in Syria. Now that they're in Iraq and cutting the heads off innocent American journalists, well, that's quite a different matter, it would appear. Let's hear from Mahmoud in Algeria. Mahmoud, welcome.
Welcome. Good evening, Mr. Joy.
Good evening to you, sir. Go ahead.
First of all, God bless you, Mr. Joy.
Thank you, sir.
And all I want to say for people of Palestine, I know this is a good time. It's a hard time for them. I know after this war, they will succeed what they want to achieve. By the grace of God, God bless you and God bless Palestine. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Welcome. That was short but very sweet from Mahmoud in Algeria. And that, I think, represents the view across the world, from Latin America through most of Europe and certainly on the streets of the Arab countries also. Let's hear from Abdul Razak in Libya. Welcome to the show, sir. Go ahead.
Hello, good evening, sir.
Good evening. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, you know, you know, this problem of ISIL and what's their name?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you, Abdul Razak. I'll need to move on. First of all, it's a bad line. Secondly, despite what I've said every single Thursday night for the last 5 years, the volume on your television is up and needs to be at zero. We'll try and get back to you. We're talking about the extraordinary fact that the United Kingdom government is still selling weapons to Israel, which is massacring Palestinians by the score every single day, most of them civilians, and most of those women and children. And the pause for just 5 days is well and truly over. And since the more than 135, I think it's now probably more than 140 airstrikes in the last 36 hours have killed dozens of women and children in Gaza. Nobody is lifting a finger to help them. David Cameron promised that British arms exports would be reviewed if large-scale hostilities broke out again. They've broken out again, David, and you're not keeping your promise. Let's hear from Peter in Illinois, in the United States. Peter, welcome.
Hi, George. How are you doing today?
I'm good, by the grace of God. Go ahead, sir.
I'm calling now because I read an article, and I needed to get it verified by you if possible. It said that Britain and France are trying to pressure the ICC and to stop the investigation into war crimes.
That's correct. Not
Israel.
Just Britain and France. The United States government, which hasn't even signed the ICC treaty, refuses to sign it. is putting pressure on the ICC that it refuses to recognize, not to bring a prosecution in relation to the murder that's being carried out by Israel. You couldn't make it up, Peter, but I can confirm it. The British and French governments are absolutely complicit up to the neck in that.
Yeah, and my next question for you, and it's my last question, is what do you think that us as Americans here in America can do? Because a lot of our politicians, they're afraid of AIPAC, and it seems like it's political suicide to even question Israel. And I've gone to protests, and I'm getting aware of it, and I'm getting people that I know involved. I do the boycott, and I'm trying to see, like, because, you know, it's unanimous. They all support them. And I'm trying to find politicians that, you know, that we can vote for to make change. But what do you recommend that we
do? Well, in the Senate, in the vote in the Senate just a couple of weeks ago, it was 100%. You're right. It was unanimous. Imagine any parliament in the world unanimous in support of Israel, in denunciation of the Palestinians' right to defend themselves, and denouncing the international community's suggestion at the United Nations in Geneva that they might conduct an inquiry into possible war crimes and possible crimes against humanity carried out by Israel over the last 4 weeks. 100% of all the senators present, and there was 96 of them present, supported that motion. So you've got an uphill battle, but you are the majority. This is the point that needs to be made, Peter. By all opinion polls over the last 12 months, the majority of the people in the United States of America think that their country is far too close to the Zionist state of Israel, the apartheid state, the settler state of Israel. And somehow that majority has to make itself felt, heard, and stop being ignored. And you have to find allies. And I'm happy to tell you that in Illinois, in Chicago, Illinois, for sure, because I've many times been there to speak, there is a mass movement in support of Palestine, in opposition to the Zionist state. And you need to hook up with them, Peter. You need to find allies, allies who are like you, allies who are different from you, but who agree on this point. You need to link up, make alliances. Paddy in Ireland on the subject of ISIL. Paddy, welcome.
Thank you, Brother George.
Nice to hear from you, sir. Go ahead, Paddy.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Yeah, by the grace of God, I'm good. On you go, sir.
Thank God for that.
Thanks.
I'd like to wish you and your family very well, and all our brothers and sisters in Palestine, I wish them all the best, and I pray for them still daily.
Thank you, Paddy.
George, I was considering this proposal with regard to figuring out what we do about the marauders, the ISIL, Al-Qaeda marauders that are ruining the Middle East at the moment.
Mm.
And maybe I'm simplifying things too much, but I would suggest that an idea to help calm this terrible situation of these murderers would be done for the USA, the UK and the EU to get down on bended knees and beg Iran to please get involved and help figure this out. And with the help of Iran, I'm sure with the Shia majority in Iraq, they would be able to quell the situation with a lot of effort, but it could be done. And with, perhaps I'm mistaken on this, but the military of Iraq were pretty much humiliated by the bombardment of the murdering Americans during their onslaught after the terrible sanctions imposed upon the Iraqis. And perhaps if the Lebanese would get involved as well, and perhaps Hezbollah could help retrain the military and give them a sense of morale, that would help. And if it could happen, then perhaps the Syrians would help with the infrastructure.
Well, I understand that you're searching for a solution, Paddy, and that's admirable. The solution you propose has many problems associated with it. ISIL is drawing on for its support the Sunni Muslim minority in the west of Iraq and in other parts also. And if one transformed this into a Shia-Sunni conflict, which is what imperialism has laid out for us as the most obvious path, the path of least resistance, if you like, that would be a very historic mistake. Because the more it was seen in that way, the more danger of Sunnis in neighboring countries throwing their weight behind the ISIL phenomenon. The more danger of Sunnis around the Muslim world thinking that ISIL was not just a terrorist murder gang, but something more significant, and that had to be supported and defended. So Iran is far too intelligent to play into the hands of such a conspiracy. Otherwise, the Iranian army could have been in Iraq now and could have wiped out ISIL. But only until something like them rose up again, this time bigger. So that's why Iran hasn't got involved. Iran is helping, training the Iraqi army, trying to put some backbone into the Iraqi army. And the Revolutionary Guard commander has been there to Baghdad, has tried to do what he could. But Iran alone intervening in Iraq would be a very grave mistake. That's why I use this formulation. First, we need a government in Baghdad that is seen by the majority of people of all kinds in Iraq as a genuinely Iraqi government, and that Iraq is still a genuine state. That government in Baghdad has the right to ask for support from its neighbors. Iran, importantly, yes, but also Turkey, and I believe also Saudi Arabia. And in that region, with the Kurdish forces already occupied in fighting ISIL, there's more than enough firepower, there's more than enough military strength to deal with 10 to 20,000 terrorists in ISIL. We don't need, the last thing that we need is the US and British governments becoming again involved in a problem that they did so much to create in the first place. That would be asking the criminal to return to the scene of their former crime in order to stop consequent crimes, crimes which are consequential to the big crime that the United States and Britain committed in the first place. Paddy, thanks for the call. Dramme is on the line in Germany. Let's hear from Dramme on ISIL. Dramme, welcome.
I greet you in the name of God, Mr. Galloway.
Thank you, sir, and the same to you. Go ahead.
I am a follower from you anyway, out Germany here. But Mr. Galloway, I'm a bit confused. I don't really know how to sympathize with Foley's death. Don't understand me wrong. I'm totally against of these takfiri, confused people who are not in for any kind of religion in the world. But how about the thousands of Syrians who've died from this takfiri confusion? What about this date of black people in misery? Isn't it John McCain met with the leader of these devils in Syria? When they were calling these devils moderate people fighting against Bashar al-Assad, now they are having a bankruptcy in their ideology after killing one American? Mr. Galloway, how is that?
Well, Foley was a human being. He had rights. He was a child of God. His life was brutally ended. It was ended in the most horrific way possible. Whilst he was chained and could not defend himself, and in cold blood. It is vital that you don't engage in moral relativism. That because Foley's government committed many crimes there and elsewhere, is still committing many crimes, there and elsewhere, that you lose your empathy with the individual human soul called Foley. It is vital. You said you find it difficult to feel sympathy. My heart is breaking for that young man and for the mother and father he left behind and who may even have seen his life's blood draining into the desert sand. That does not stop me hating his government. That does not stop me hating ISIL for all the other innocent souls that they have murdered and massacred with Western support. One is not a contradiction to the other. And I beg you to re-examine what you said on the show this evening. Nezar is in the United Kingdom. Wants to talk about the United Kingdom's arms exports to Israel. Nezar, welcome.
Hello, George. I'm a British Palestinian teenager. I'm living in Brighton.
Okay.
Firstly, can I just say that I loved your speech outside the Israeli embassy on July 19th at the national demonstration opposing Israeli apartheid and blatant genocide against an innocent Palestinian people.
Thank you.
Furthermore, I wholeheartedly support your comments regarding Israel and Bradford and fully support anything that's going on in that instance. Recent research conducted by the CAAT actually shows that the UK has exported £42 million in arms to Israel since 2010. Would you say and agree that all three leaders from the political parties in the United Kingdom should commit to an out-and-out arms embargo to Israel?
Definitely, and thank you for your kind support. CATT is the Campaign Against the Arms Trade, and it has consistently, over many years, charted the sheer scale of the United Kingdom's weapon sales to Israel. But actually, Britain is now buying more weapons from Israel even than it is selling. So I go further than you. We need to boycott this rogue terrorist, nuclear-armed terrorist state. We shouldn't be selling them weapons. We shouldn't be buying weapons. We shouldn't be buying oranges. We shouldn't be buying tomatoes. We shouldn't be buying courgettes or any other product or service from that rogue, nuclear-armed terrorist state. But the three party leaders in the United Kingdom, well, they don't agree with us. What we have to do, Nizar, is make the ground so hot under their feet that they start to agree with us, and we can. Shabir is in the UK. Let's hear from him. Shabir, welcome.
Assalamu alaikum, George. How are you?
Wa alaikum salam. Very good, sir. Thanks. Go ahead.
Good. I just wanted to say a couple of things. First of all, in England, unfortunately, we don't really have anyone, apart from maybe one political party, that could actually make any difference. But the problem is that political party is quite small. You know which one I'm talking about, Respect.
Yeah.
And so we need to do something, because I think, let's be honest, since the beginning, since Thatcher's time, since all of that, there hasn't been a government that's actually been honest and really cared about the people of England. They've always cared about other things. They've had priorities elsewhere. They've been caring about the so-called 1%. We need a party in power that actually cares about the people.
How do we get that, Shabir?
Well, I think we need to have a bit of a landswell, if you like. We need to, I think, support the one or two parties that can actually make a difference. And to be honest, I only think there's one. I think Respect is the only one, because it seems to be the only party that's actually honest, that actually cares about the people. It's not interested in all these bizarre agendas. It's not interested in being a, quote, friend of Israel.
I can promise you this, Shabir, and thank you for your comments, but I can promise you this. There will never, ever, ever be a Respect Friends of Israel. If you haven't already, I suggest you join Respect. You can do that at respectparty.org. Bobby is in Botswana. Bobby, welcome in Botswana. Go ahead.
John?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I have a lot of questions. I don't understand when is a terrorist not a terrorist. Because when I look at ISIL, what is happening in Syria and in Iraq, even the UN hasn't been making any comments when it was happening in Syria, when it was happening in Iraq. I was so much surprised after the video of an American. The UN chief made some comments and has been quiet all the time. The question is, we are human beings and we are Christians, most of us. It's like, it's only when the American had been killed by terrorists that seemed to be terrorists, like it has happened now.
Hmm.
It looked like it's now the world is awakening. And one thing that I appreciate, Arabs or Muslims, I would say they are kind of prophets, because Ayatollah Khomeini had said it. He said, one day they'll be back to their supporters. Syrian president also said that one day they'll be back to their supporters. And that is exactly what is happening.
Well, now, Bobby, first of all, the majority...
I will not support the killing of people. But are we saying we'll only be safe when Americans or British are killed?
Well, that's, of course, the attitude of the British and American governments and their media echo chambers. They didn't want to know. Over the last 3 years, when I was asking David Cameron and asking in the House of Commons, in Parliament, why are you supporting Al-Qaeda here whilst you're telling us to oppose Al-Qaeda there, and so on. They didn't want to know. And the media ridiculed me for asking these questions. But they're not laughing now, because it's more and more obvious that the Frankenstein monster of Al-Qaeda, created in the beginning in the 1980s in Afghanistan, has now become a mortal threat to everybody. Every Christian, every Muslim, every Jew, every non-believer, every country is now threatened by this monster that the West did so much to create. One thought that they had learned their lesson from the Bin Laden phenomenon. One thought that they had learned their lesson after 9/11. But they got back into bed with Al-Qaeda. And look at the result. Let me quickly squeeze in Hassan in London. Go ahead, Hassan.
Oh, hi, George. How are you doing?
Okay, sir. Go ahead quickly.
So just quick thing about ISIL and the Zionist thing. I think both of them are exactly the same. Both have hijacked religion. Zionists hijacked the Jewish religion, and ISIL hijacked religion of Islam. And both got the same friends. US, UK, Turkey, Qatar, Saudi, they're all the friends. And they all both share the same enemies, such as Iran, Syria, Russia, Lebanon, and Iraq. And the point is, we should learn from the history, and we should not let, especially the Muslim people, Sunni, Shia, they should not let ISIL hijack Islam, just like as Zionists hijacked Jewish and Jewish
well,
religion.
Well, Hassan, I really couldn't put that better. I don't have time in any case to even try, but there is no need to try. You have, in a nutshell, made the very point of this whole show this evening. Zionism has hijacked Judaism and falsely seeks to act in its name. ISIL has hijacked Islam and seeks to commit crimes in its name. That's it. Next week, God willing.
Hello, please comment your name and the picture of that number. And just make sure that your telephone volume is set to
0. 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You can just put your phone number and then we'll be back.
Can I have your telephone number?